Welcome to the Featured Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rick.
And today, we are talking about Darwin's Game. This was Rick's choice. Producer for it was Annie Plex, studio of Nexus. Genres were action, mystery, shonen. And it was 11 episodes long.
Surprisingly short, to be perfectly honest. I was expecting 12 to 14. And when I was, when I found out that it was only 11 by pure accident, because I was thinking, oh, they probably just skipped a week. I don't know why. And I was sorely, I don't know how to say it. Not so sorely.
Disappointed.
Yeah, that's a good word. Sorely disappointed by the fact that it was just done, especially since they left a teaser at the very end of the last episode.
Right. And this series is actually really new. It aired between January 2020 all the way through March 2020. One of the reasons why they actually only did 11 episodes is because episode 1, if I remember correctly, is actually 45 minutes long. So it's two episodes basically in length.
Yeah, they did that. But they also did that with Shield Hero, which is why I was really happy to think that this was a trend that would continue.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, like, if you were to do what Darwin's Game did, you could say that Shield Hero should have been 26 episodes long.
Fair. But still, it was huge relief to see that it was not a steaming pile of crap, because most anime, recently at least, start in a really good area, and they have the very first two or three episodes go insanely strong, and then they can't seem to continue with the momentum. Either the story gets stagnant or the ideas go down. I don't know, but this maintained a nice high level of quality, I guess is a good way to put it, the entire way through.
It definitely was a little unique. When it was first airing, we talked a little bit about it in the Discord when it was first coming out. And I'd have to echo what I said before. It's kind of reminds me a little bit of a King's Game, just not nearly as screwed up.
Yeah.
And it's like a cross between like King's Game and Magical Girls. And the app interface for it, right, definitely had that vibe, that feel for it. King's Game, in that once you're pulled into this thing unwillingly, you're kind of SOL, just like in Magical Girls as well.
True. Okay, I can definitely see the similarities between Magic Girl and this. I just think if they're going the same route, that would be a huge disappointment, in my personal opinion.
That's kind of the feeling I got from it, especially at the end.
The thing that gets me about this whole scenario, about this, where does the money come in? Because in Magic Girl, money was never a thing. Whereas here, they're using actual currency. Like, if you wanted to cash in your points, this is an amazing way to do so. The problem is the points are your literal life points. If they go to zero, you die. You assume you die, and it's not a clean death. I mean, it's clean, and there's no actual cleanup other than, you know, the chunks of concrete that are missing.
Right.
But like, you, as you're disappearing, your eyes and brain can be gone, but your mouth still talks, which makes me think that maybe they're not actually dying. They're just being schlepped off to this holding area until the game's done, kind of thing, you know?
I don't know. Also, for the points, I don't think it's your literal life points, because no one ever really states that. The only time where it comes in to play, where if you don't have enough points, guess what? You're all dead, comes in towards the end for episode 11, after all the events have transpired, which most of it takes place during one singular event.
Yeah, that's where it solidified it for me. But in the very beginning, do you remember when his friend was like, crap, I'm sorry to bring you into this, but like, here's what happens. If you end up dying, he gets all your points.
Right.
Or if you lose too much, he gets all your points. And in technically, the invisible dude, the invisible panda baseball bat guy at the very beginning, he didn't die because of a car crash. He died because his points got taken. Like, he would have survived that, I think.
There was no way he was going to be able to move around after that.
Not easily, but as you saw later on, they can fix an arm being chopped off.
Yeah, but it's because of that one person's sigil, and she would have to be willing to do that. I don't think she'd be willing to.
You have a point, but I can't say that her sigil was so unique, you know? It might be.
Well, everyone has their own unique sigil.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, we didn't actually touch on that. You're right. Sorry, we're jumping around a bit. But yeah, no, everyone's got their own unique power, essentially.
So basically, how this whole thing starts off, we have our main protagonist, Kaname, and he's being drawn into this game, Darwin's game, by a friend. Not willingly pulled in. He's just trying to get some help or some kind of help because Kaname's friend is being hunted to the death.
By the rookie hunter.
And when he clicks on this app to download it, the snake comes out and bites him in the neck. And it gives him a barcode and a power, a sigil. Now, his sigil, you don't know what it is, especially when the other main character, Shuka, is talking to him about it. She's like, well, you should just know what it is. You should have this already basic understanding what it is. It should be as natural as breathing. And he doesn't know. And when he looks at the app where it should tell him what his sigil is, it just says error.
Yeah, he gets a very unique, of course he gets a very unique sigil, a newer, much more rarer sigil than anybody's ever given. And you find out later on, he essentially has the god of fire or god of iron, god of creation. If he holds something in his hand, he can duplicate it. When he loses concentration, it dissipates.
Right. And what the sigil is actually called, I think they said it a couple different ways, but it's like supposed to be Flame God's Hammer or the Flame God of Iron or something like that.
And yeah, basically it's a blacksmith.
And so he can't create just anything he wants. And he'll know inherently what he can and can't duplicate just by touching it. So if he touches it, he can duplicate it. And he can even push things beyond their limitation. So he can fabricate a gun and then have high efficiency bullets or have turn it into armor piercing rounds or whatever else, or have it set so that way it pushes the life of the gun, makes it shorter because it doesn't matter, but has that increased firepower.
Yeah. Case in point, when he was about to die, he had a Naruto-esque experience where when Naruto's about to die, he talks to his demon or the Nine Tails. In this particular case, right when he's about to die, he's sat in front of his, I'm going to call it an avatar because I don't know what else to call it. His inner sigil starts kind of like talking to him, but not really. And he gains a much deeper understanding. And he goes, you know what? Not only I don't have the ability to copy, I have the ability to understand everything about this creation. And if I just add more here to the gunpowder, I can make the output of the bullets this much greater. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh my God, if he was to create a 357 Magnum, and because he has perfect knowledge and perfect construction of this weapon, he can literally have a hand cannon that has a one bullet lifespan and just simply spam that.
True, but it does take a toll on him every time he produces.
Yeah, the way I envisioned it was very much like magic points in a game. It's a limited amount that regenerates over time. At least that's how I saw it. Does that make sense? No,
that makes perfect sense because that's actually what they say. They even say, I'm completely spent. If you give me some time to rest, I'll be good again. So you do have to rest. You can't just sit there and spam it constantly without repercussions. And one of the main villains for this, Wang, he even says... I can do this once, maybe twice. I can do teleport one or two more times. And mentally, he's saying that. And everything, all of them have a limitation on it.
So the thing I never understood about Wang is specifically how his sigil worked. Like, how does teleportation equal chopping limbs off? Specifically, cleanly with fingers.
Yeah, see, that's one of the things that I also had a difficulty understanding. Also, it's not like he can alter the fabrics of reality, right? His moments or his motions are predetermined still, even to that point. And the reason why I bring this up, Rain, she basically has the ability of foresight. She knows what every living atom in the earth or world are doing at any given point in time.
Schrodinger's cat. Yeah, she uses the Schrodinger's cat or Schrodinger's cat, something like that. I forget what it is, but basically her sigil allows, if she takes an action, she can see the logical progression.
I think what you mean is Laplace's demon, or which is a hypothetical being that knows the exact location and momentum of every atom in the universe. Her sigil is called Worldwide Function.
Yeah. So Laplace's demon, I actually knew this a while ago. I can't believe I messed that up. I'm so sorry. So the theory of Laplace's demon is, if you know the exact location of any one atom, the movement that it's going, the speed in reference to its surroundings, moving forward from there, you can use logic and dictate where it will be at any point in time in the future. And that is a popular way to say that if you know everything about any one particular thing, you know everything about everything else. Any interaction it does, anything it comes in contact with, is now part of your purview. Mathematically speaking, it does not vary from your calculations, assuming your calculations are correct. Yeah. The thing I don't get is, when she was using her sigil for the Laplace's demon, Wang was not part of that. Wang showed up as a surprise to her. At least that's the way it looked like.
Well, and that's how it was interpreted, because even she had said something like, why is he here? And it's like, well, you should know. I mean, like, if you know about him, if you know the kind of guy he is, then you would know that he would just be there. Now, here's the... and he would have been there within a 5-meter radius, because he even states before that his... Or it's not even stated before, but they even explain that he has a limitation of 5 meters.
Now, do you think... I just thought of this, and it makes a certain kind of sense to me, if this is the case, that it makes a certain kind of sense to me if teleportation is not limited to himself, if he can teleport other things. For instance, if he can teleport a very thin line of flesh of your finger, essentially, he teleports a section of your finger away, and that in itself would remove whatever is not attached to your body. So if I was to remove your middle knuckle via teleportation, the rest of your finger would fall off. Now imagine refining that to a paper thin line. That would give you the illusion of slicing fingers off. Or, as he did before, cut through a door using the teleportation. And when you cut through a door, you're cutting through the people behind the door. That's the only way I can understand his teleportation equaling slicing people to bits.
Yeah, and that's probably about it, too. I mean, they don't really go into details of how each how each sigil works. They just do a real basic description of this is what it does, and it's like, cool, bro. Cool story.
Yeah, but so in your opinion, I mean, this is my opinion, but in your opinion, does it make sense that each sigil is under interpretation? Like the limitation is only your understanding of it? Because that would make sense for the iron fire thing. What was it called?
The flame god of hammers or iron or whatever, yeah. For Konami.
So his understanding increased about his sigil. His ability to use a sigil increased. And maybe the same things with this guy. His understanding of teleportation wasn't limited to I can move from one place to another, or I can use my ace in the hole, or I can switch places with someone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's a pretty interesting theory behind it. I can totally see that too. I totally see that. Your limitation is based on your understanding of what your sigil is and what it can do.
Dude, that would be amazing. Imagine if you had a different sigil or you used...
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, that totally coincides with the mentality of how they do the event, right? So they do the event and they're talking about... the rules and what you have to do and everything like that. And if you have at least three at the end of the game, you'll still be there. And then once you start reading it and rereading it and then truly trying to understand the fundamentals behind it, that's when you truly understand the real meaning of the game and how to actually complete it.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because the way understanding, if, and I can't believe I just thought of this, if understanding is tantamount to everything there, everything is not necessarily what it seems. It's what your understanding allows you to perceive. For instance, you're right. In that group event, so to speak, their understanding of the game changed with more information. His sigil changed with more information.
Yep.
So instead of it being a, hey, we need these this many rings in order to complete the game. Wait, no, that's not what it says. It says, get this. Or, and you'll pass, or if the game is completed. Wait a second, they don't have enough rings for everybody. Is the intention to kill everybody, or is the intention to find another answer?
Yep.
Your understanding expands, so maybe another answer is present.
Exactly, and that's one of the things, right? So basically, all those people that were killed or that died off didn't really need to.
True, if they'd have just worked together, but everyone, for some weird reason, is bloodthirsty.
Of course. Wouldn't you be?
Depending on what my sigil would be. I'm actually kind of curious. What do you think your sigil would be?
I don't know. I don't speculate on the what ifs simply because my sigil would probably be something lame, like...
like telling the truth? Like that one guy's?
Yeah, lie detector?
Yeah.
Ryuji's?
Could you imagine if his understanding was just limited? And his sigil's limitation wasn't simply just lie detector, but he could exude or he could make other people believe the lie. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. And it definitely is, you know, interesting to think about. I would love to see like more information on it. And I feel like if they do come out with the season two, there would be more information on it. Or if we read the manga, I have a feeling that we may be able to get some more information based off of it.
True. I hate to say it. I'm not a manga reader. Like if I really get involved with something, I might. Attack on Titan, for instance. I did read some of the manga, but for something like this, they didn't have it long enough to draw me in to the point where I want to read the manga. Yeah. It wasn't cliffhangery enough, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Basically, the sense of it was... it'll just be a rinse and repeat. And this is why I said, like I said earlier, kind of reminds me a little bit of a Magical Girl project, is the guy never said he created the game.
Yeah, he never gave the impression, at least to me, that he created it. It made it feel like he was the current holder, so to speak, of the game. He was the current game master.
Exactly. And this is really brought to light, too, at the end of the event for them, when he says, I am the current game master, basically. And
yeah,
what's interesting, too, is he says there's only two ways out of this, out of it. And one of the ways is to complete the game.
What's the true objective of the it all comes back to understanding. You don't have enough understanding of the game. I thought it was genius that he used his the main character used his I don't know if you're going to call it privilege as a
special privilege event
winner. Yeah, special privilege as an event winner to create the bankrupt thing.
The all in, all or nothing. That's what it was. It was all or nothing. So yeah, basically if he puts everything in, right, and he uses it and you can't at least match that when they win, then you basically lose your entire clan too.
So essentially when you go to war and everything revolves around points, Wang specifically went to war with with the main character. And in that war, typically the loser would only give up a certain amount of coins, a certain percentage of whatever they agree upon. This loophole basically says if you don't hold majority of the chips or a greater amount of chips, you could potentially lose your not only your life, but your clan's life. And that is a massive deterrent. Just imagine.
Right.
It would be like going into a poker game. And you're like, hey, I've got 100,000. And the guy's like, yeah, I've got 3 million. If we're going to do this first hand all in, what you got? You're going to be super hesitant because you're going to be like, well, this is not only my income and what I'm going to use to eat, but this is also my entire family's behind me.
Well, do here's I really the thing. No one else knows of his special privilege. And it's a special privilege that's only available to the clans. Right, or to him for the clan. And that's why he says, Wang says to Kaname, I'll give you 1800. That should be enough. This and that, blah, blah, blah. And then Kaname says to Wang, he's like, no. You see, I have a special privilege. It's called all or nothing. If you don't at least match what I have, yeah, you lose everything.
The crazy thing is, I thought for some reason that was broadcast.
No.
No. Check this out. The information broker who's on his team, wouldn't that be a great way to get it out, to get the word out about the special privilege?
Yeah, why would you want to get it out there when it's your trump card?
As a deterrent.
No, that wouldn't be a deterrent because you'd get people like Wang wanting to come in there and sideswipe you because it's a double-edged sword, I would assume.
I would think it would be mutually assured destruction.
Right. That's the only thing I can think of. Would do is ensure people are coming up to him or have a plan to attack him. So that way they could make sure he's wiped out, period. And I would also assume that it's not always active. It's only active when he wants to have it active.
I could see that.
Because you see him go into the settings after the battle or just before it starts, the clan war. You see him go into the settings after that to do something, but they don't show you what it is.
Yeah. It was suspenseful, don't get me wrong, and I thought it was pure justice, but I don't know. I like the fact that Wang got his comeuppance.
Oh, yeah.
I like the fact that Wang was handled so, I'm not going to say elegantly, but thoroughly.
Appropriately.
That's a good way to put it, appropriately.
So here's another question for you, sir. Kaname's friend who was kidnapped, who then got drawn into the Darwin's game.
Yep.
Why didn't he disappear?
He did. He didn't disappear right away, but he did end up blocking out.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? The box was still there. When you're disappearing, when you're blocking out. Now, the vision that Kaname has, it shows him blocked out, right? He's in the school classroom and shows him his friends blocked out, but he's at the box and the body is still there. And normally when you're blocked out, it's not just you. It's like if you're laying on the ground or if you're leaning up against something, that gets blocked out too a little bit. The box was still there.
So you're right. The box was still there. My only thought, as far as that's concerned, is maybe like Wang didn't kill him completely until he showed up, you know?
Yeah. And but at the same time, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure he was dead because, well, here's part of the problem that I'm getting at. Remember the florist? After he died, he didn't disappear right away. But as for everyone else, once they died, they started disappearing almost immediately.
I got nothing for that. I genuinely don't know.
Is it like special case scenarios in which some people do block away right away and others don't?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of as far as the florist is his sigil was still active, you know? So his sigil was still active, which is why he didn't go away immediately. The sigil had to stop working or stop. I don't know. I honestly don't know. That'd be a good thing to ask.
There are a lot of questions for this.
The most important question is, do you think there's going to be a season two?
I think there could be a season two. I believe they pushed hard enough for it that I will hope that there is a season two, because it ends with him basically being in another event.
Yeah. I don't know if that, see, in my head, that's like season two in the middle. Because mm-hmm. he's already complaining, like, this is complete BS. I can't believe this is going on. Now, we were on Discord earlier in the week, and I believe a new guy coming in, Bookish.
Yeah.
He mentioned that he doesn't believe there will be a season two. I hope he's wrong, but I mean, it's open to discussion. That's what that's kind of what our Discord's there for, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. There's one more thing. I hate how hypocritical Konami became.
Seriously, though.
Like, at first he was like, I don't want to kill anyone. We all need to live. We should all get along together and everything else. And he was all about, you know, symbiotic relationships and everything like that. And then he met an assassin, and, you know, he's like, after the event, he's like, I'm a total badass. And then it then progresses to, I don't want to kill anyone. I'm just going to murder everyone. And then when he defeats Wang's clan and they're all taken out, he's taking over all the territories, and he's basically setting up a safe haven where Darwin's game is basically prohibited within his area, which is Wang's area that he took over, and people were trying to set it up, and he's murdering, and literally everyone is murdering everyone that's trying to set up territory in there, and leaving one person alive. And the response is, I'm leaving you alive so that you could tell everyone that Darwin's game's not allowed here. It's like, wait, so you have a game going on and you're setting it up in Darwin's game to have a Darwin's game area be disallowed, and you're murdering everyone just for that.
Well, I mean, I can see the philosophy behind it. The philosophy he started with was that of a pacifist, and then it transformed from pacifism to activism, and then from activism to something more extreme. Let's call it extremism for...
Let's just call it what it is. Murder.
Murder. Well, I mean, he goes from it is what it is to we can try to change it to he snapped. And I think him snapping is something that is relatable.
Yeah.
For instance, if you and I were in that situation and something like that were to happen to you, I would go and say, like, I would snap and retribution would be had, which I assume would be the same in reverse situations.
True.
But like, I feel for the guy. He lost his third and probably most innocent friend all because of his own personal actions in his mind. And it sucks. And when I saw the cliffhanger of that episode where it goes click, and then that face, I'm like, I got super hyped for the next episode.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be so badass. You just unleashed the sleeping giant. And I don't know. It was a beautiful combination of everything I wanted and everything that was required. He just went ballistic, and he realized that he cannot be as naive as to think that everyone will go along with his ideal. That to be a king, if you would, of this game, you need to be assertive and you need to make the decisions that, for lack of a better word, hurt your own soul.
And he also became a excellent marksman overnight.
I think, honestly, that came with his sigil. Like, think about it. Perfect understanding of the tool you're using allows for a higher compatibility. If I know everything about a knife in my hand, let's say I'm chopping onions, and I know every angle and every millimeter of where everything's going to go, I can use this thing with confidence. If I have a hammer in my hand.
If you have that, that instantly makes you a better sword fighter? I mean, like, is that what you're saying?
I would think so. I would hope so.
I mean, like, I know that's not what's going to happen. You can know the philosophy behind it all, but that doesn't make you an excellent fighter. That doesn't make you an excellent anything. I know how to perfectly chop this. Cool.
Well, think about
this. You're still going to die.
True. Practice makes perfect. However, if you, as his sigil was stated, it's like breathing. And when he understands the weapon almost naturally, as if he was born with this knowledge, if you were born with a sword in your hand, that's not just a sword. Yeah, but that's for the
knowledge of the sigil. You should know how to use your sigil. Using your sigil to create something, it should come as natural as breathing. Not using your sigil and knowing how to properly use a weapon.
You have a point there. I will surrender that point. However, I feel that knowing the weapon, have an intimate knowledge of it, you should be able to use it as you would. Use it as well as you think you should. Does that make sense?
Dude, I know a lot of people that know their weapons very intimately, and I guarantee you they are not using it the way it should, and they are pretty horrible. So,
you know what? But they're not an anime. And that makes all the difference.
Fair enough. I will concede to that. All right. So I think this is a great spot. Scale of up to 10, sir. How would you rate this?
Honestly, an 8. I was teetering between 7 and 8. 7 because of the way it ended. But if I take that last 20 minutes out, I think that if they would have just taken, well, not 20, if they took the last, let's say, 5 minutes out of their little sneak preview, that was an awesome open and shut season.
All right.
I felt that it was good. So I'm going to go with an 8.
I actually echo you. I actually have to say this is an 8. It's good. I didn't like that they kind of pushed season 2 really hard. It kind of lost me on how hypocritical Konami became. But overall, it was a pretty good show. It definitely does remind me a lot of Magical Girl Project, so I would be really disappointed if it followed something similar to that.
Agreed.
So next week is my choice.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what about next? What monstrosity are you gonna lay on me this week?
Somali and the Forest Spirit.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's done.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. That's worrisome. I've already seen episodes 1 through 6. I did enjoy it as I would say as an epic tale, not necessarily as an anime, but I'm hoping it delivers better.
Yeah, I've seen the first couple of episodes. It actually came out pretty recently. It's 12 episodes long, January 2020. Genres are adventure, drama, fantasy, and slice of life.
I definitely see that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you have a recommendation on what we should watch, feel free to reach out to us. If you feel like we missed something, we got something wrong, or if you just want to plain old say that we are wrong in general, feel free to do so. You can reach out to us on our Discord. A link for that is in the show notes. You can also email us at featuredanimepodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at us at @thoseanimeguys. @featuredanimepodcast on Facebook. And if you're watching this on YouTube, or rather listening to this on YouTube, you can also leave a comment there and let us know how we're doing or give a recommendation or anything else. Be happy to respond to you on there. Until next time, I'm Jay.